Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Nathan Chapman. I represent the appellants, Mr. and Mrs. Nelson, who are here behind me today before the Court. Your Honors, I intend to rely mainly on the brief that we filed. I think it lays out the legal arguments, but I think it's necessary to, with the Court's permission, point out a few facts and put a little bit of the story together for you. You'll see from the facts that are listed in our brief that my clients are, the appellants are the paternal grandparents of two young boys, Gavin and Zachary. They, the record will indicate, had the young boys had lived off and on with the grandparents. At some point in the fall of 2016, there became some family issues between the mother and father, and the children were taken into care of the department, Middlesex Department of Social Services.
Counsel, may yes. I interrupt you? And we are very familiar with this case. It's somewhat intriguing, I will grant you. But in reference to the final order of adoption, which was on 4/19/17.
Yes.
Okay, and this case was appealed. It was appealed in December.
Yes.
Okay, so you've got that 6-month stretch.
Yes.
And, of course, you've read the statute. I know we all have. So how is it that you believe that we can even entertain this?
My reading of the statute, and frankly, it doesn't get litigated all that much, and here we are. My reading of that statute is that the court has, the legislatures have determined, frankly, it aids our argument, that matters of this import have carry such gravity. That the ordinary time frame for appeal should be extended.
I actually don't read the statute that way.
Mm-hmm.
I read it as saying because of the need for finality and adoptions, we have the normal 21-day Rule 1-1.
Yeah,
every Virginia lawyer better needs to know that the trial court is divested of jurisdiction after the 21 days have run. Now, there are exceptions to the 21-day rule for fraud, to correct so-called clerical errors under 801-384-B, those type of things that are exceptions to the trial court losing jurisdiction under Rule 1-1. What I read the statute to say is even if you come up with something that would allow the trial court to revisit an issue, even though we're more than 21 days out, in an adoption order, if you're more than 6 months out, we don't touch it.
I understand that reading, Your Honor, I do. And frankly, attorneys and circuit court judges wrestle with this exact discussion right here. And to make it even more complicated, some judges are of the opinion that you can, unless the circuit court were to rule within 6 months, not just file a motion like we did, but rule within 6 months, they've lost. So perhaps this is the opportunity for some clarification on all that. My clients and I hope that the court reads it that these matters carry such import that they should be that a circuit court can look at it for those reasons up to and including 6 months following the final order.
In the proceedings below, was there any reference, because I could not find one, to a constitutional due process right to notice of the adoption proceeding for your clients? In your brief here, there's some reference to them having, although it cites parent cases, and you're arguing, you're extrapolating a little bit.
We did extrapolate.
I don't know that it's a fair extrapolation, but in the proceedings below, I did not see any constitutional argument raised. Can you confirm that for me or point me to where in the record I missed it?
I cannot point you to where we said due process. I cannot. I can point you repeatedly to where we said notice. And frankly, what we thought would become a hearing on whether we could view the file devolved, in our opinion, into a discussion about the actual merits of whether there should be the motion to rehear should be granted.
Is there any statutory provision that requires grandparents either be given notice of adoption proceedings or in any way consent to adoption proceedings?
There is not. There is not.
Okay.
Your questions are directly on point, Your Honor, and anticipated. However, I would point the court to the UCCJEA. If I were to file petitions in juvenile court, I have to affirm under oath that no other litigation is pending related to this matter.
And if we were proceeding under that statute, that strikes me that the requirements of that statute are pretty
sure.
significant.
Anyone who has litigation pending, anything related to these children, come now and have your peace. What I think this court should find most troubling, though, is that the grandparents filed their petitions for custody, and as you can see from, you'll see that they filed them on April 3rd. 2 weeks later, petitions for adoption were filed. 2 days later, the orders for adoption were entered while my client's petitions were pending.
Well, your clients, if I understand the record, both before the father's rights were terminated and after, filed independent petitions for custody in the JNDR court.
They did.
And in both circumstances, never received an adverse ruling which could be subject to appeal, because in both cases, for whatever reason, and I'm not saying that they were mistaken or it was a bad reason, they withdrew them before there was any ruling on them. Is that correct?
That's correct, although the second time we're starting to go around in the same circle that I went in circuit court.
I understand.
Because if we could see the record and have a hearing, I think we would find out that the grandparents were told that these children have been adopted, you no longer have an interest, you no longer have standing. And for someone who didn't go to law school, whether they're withdrawn or dismissed doesn't matter, run along, you've lost, that ship has sailed. And that's why we needed to see and get into what happened in the lower court.
Well, right, but we can't even touch what happened in the lower court because we don't have jurisdiction to review orders of the Juvenile and Domestic Relations Court.
But you can touch circuit court, Judge, and they can touch juvenile court.
Well, right, but whether it's fair to somebody who's never been to law school is you have, and so you know that withdrawn, no ruling, there was nothing to appeal.
Correct.
To the circuit court, which means definitionally there's nothing from those petitions that we can touch other than to note historically, because they're in our record, that they were withdrawn and no ruling was ever
correct
reached.
Okay. Correct. And frankly, Your Honors, that's where we find ourselves. That's exactly where we find ourselves. They had their petitions filed for custody and visitation in juvenile court. After their petitions were filed and while their petitions were pending, the adoption petitions were filed in circuit court, and 2 days later that order was entered, so that when the grandparents returned to juvenile court, there was no longer any need for a hearing, and they no longer had standing because of the adoption.
In the circuit court itself, it seemed that you were making an argument to challenge, the grandparents were trying to make an argument effectively to challenge the termination of parental rights decision. Is that?
That's part of it. Yes, it is.
And there were three arguments raised for that. There was lack of notice, but we've just discussed there is no statute requirement.
We'll concede there's no statutory requirement.
That they didn't consent to the adoption proceeding, but as we've discussed, there's no provision requiring their consent. And then the third was an allegation that there may have been or might have been fraud. We just don't know.
Yes,
And I understand you're going to tell me this gets you into your logical loop that without seeing what happened below, you don't know what happened below, and so you couldn't allege that something nefarious happened below. All you could say is we'd like to look and see if something nefarious.
Correct. And in that, Your Honor, you'll see my client. I proffered to the court that my client was prepared to testify that he had not been contacted by the guardian ad litem or the Department of Social Services, which is a requirement at the termination stage before placement in foster care. Therefore, the termination and the placement and the subsequent adoption have this cloud over them.
But counsel, may I interrupt you again?
Of course.
In reference to that, this, as you know, I know you're attempting a collateral attack of the termination proceeding, but of course that's not an appropriate venue or appropriate vehicle for you to get where you needed to go or where you wanted to go. The termination was not appealed. Is that correct?
That's correct. It was not. There was a voluntary termination, and whether my clients even had standing.
The sons wasn't your client's sons' rights were not voluntarily terminated.
Correct.
They were terminated by order.
Right.
Affirmed, trial de novo of the circuit court affirmed. At no point did your client seek to intervene in that proceeding.
Correct.
So they weren't parties to it.
Correct.
And then we have our decision in Tackett,
Nor could they, I don't mean to interrupt the court, nor could they have appealed that decision, I don't think.
Because they weren't a party.
Correct.
They would have had to have intervened in some way, shape, or form, which they did not do.
Correct.
And I'm not saying that they could have or would have been granted intervention, but that would have been a prerequisite to be able to appeal it.
Understood.
In Tackett, we held that a grandmother who had actually been appointed the child's guardian did not have any legal right to assert the mother's parental rights should not have been terminated. To the extent that the grandparents are essentially making a collateral attack on the termination of parental rights order here, which is the argument I understand, your argument based on Sauer and what we said the statute requires. Tackett says they don't have standing to raise that. The only person who can raise that in this case would have been the son, and actually the only person who could have raised it would have been your client's son, because the mother of the child voluntarily waived, so there's no issue there. And so then the question becomes, if we've said that grandparents don't have a right to even raise a challenge to a termination of parental rights, where are we?
I can tell you where you are, and you said a word that is extremely important. You said we're attempting to attack the termination order. In that termination order, I don't think my clients have authority or standing to contest the termination of their son's parental rights, but they can contest the order, because in that order it is required that the grandparents are considered for placement. That's step two. So the rights are terminated. Now the legislature has directed the department to look to grandparents.
How do you skip, and you're into your rebuttal time and you can keep going or you can sit down and think about the question I'm about to ask. How do you square that with our position in Tackett, where the grandmother tried to challenge the termination of parental rights because she was removed as a custodian? She was the custodian, and when the mother's rights were terminated, the court removed her as a custodian. And we said she doesn't have standing to challenge the order.
I'm going to pause and reserve the rest of my time and see if I can put together a coherent response to that in less than the 3 minutes left. Thank you.
All right.
Good morning.
And since there are two of you, and I don't know which one's which, if you'll help me out.
I'll handle that. My name is Dawn Alexander. I represent the adoptive parents, and I handle the adoption. I had no involvement in any of the foster care proceedings, was not involved in the termination of parental rights proceeding, and I was never guardian ad litem for these children. Carla Hook is counsel for the Middlesex Department of Social Services. She represented that agency in all of the foster care proceedings and the TPR proceeding. And our guardian ad litem, Kathleen McDaniel, is present on the end here. She was guardian ad litem for the children during foster care and in all foster care proceedings. Neither Ms. Hook nor Ms. McDaniel, were involved in the adoption. That was solely mine. So you know, I get adoption questions. Ms. Hook gets foster care and TPR questions.
Well, who are the proper parties in this case?
In this case, I don't believe the grandparents are proper parties, because we have a final adoption order entered in April by statute that divests the grandparents from status as grandparents. They have no legal relationship to these children and no standing to come here and try and upset the adoption. And upsetting the adoption is what the petitioners have been asking for. While they want to investigate the TPR proceeding and try and find a flaw there, that is separate from the adoption, and the termination of parental rights for the fathers was concluded in December 2016, I believe. There was no further appeal from that. The appeal period and rehearing period had run before the adoption was filed, which was in April. And yes, the adoption was concluded 2 days later. All of the paperwork, including the report of investigation, which this was an agency adoption. So normally, the statutory procedure is normally you file your petition, the court orders the report of investigation to be done. Once that's filed, the court can proceed to a final order. In this case, and in many like this, the agency is willing to provide me that report of investigation to file with the petition, so there's nothing further that the court needs. The court has documentation that parental rights have been terminated and appeal periods run.
And as to appellees, who are the proper parties?
I'm sorry?
As to appellees, who are the proper parties?
Forgive me, I don't, I'm not familiar.
On your side of the case,
who are the proper parties?
Oh, I'm sorry. The parties are the adoptive parents. The agency is involved in that they give consent. The agency basically was granted the power to place the children for adoption and consent to the adoption. And while you may or may not consider that being a party, their participation in terms of consent and the adoptive parents are the only parties. No relatives in an agency adoption where parental rights are terminated, no relatives are parties to that adoption.
But my question is, on the issues that are before us in this case on appeal, is the Department of Social Services and is the guardian ad litem, are they proper parties?
No.
Okay.
No.
Does the nation have no standing or ability to argue in the case?
No, because I think not. Because the appellants persist in their arguments in challenging the termination of parental rights proceeding or attempting to, and it would be unfair, since they're challenging that, not to allow the legal representative from that party to rebut that. It would be burdensome on me to try and deal with that because I had no involvement with it and have no legal access to information about it because of privacy rules.
Well, we know who's on the one side of the V, and that's the grandparents. Now, whether they're proper parties for various things,
right.
we know that. It seems to me that to determine who should be talking for you guys or on this side of the V, I guess, is the better
term. What is challenged is the adoption,
and I speak for the adoptive parents. If the adoption itself is challenged, and there was a motion below
right.
to set aside the adoption.
The adoption is under challenge.
But if there are arguments that go to whether the department's file should be reviewed, that wouldn't be you, that would be the department, right?
That would be the department, which is why they're involved in this. That's why they were initially involved in this. Once we got from the trial court's final order to the appellate brief, the appellants appear to have dropped the argument asking to go to agency records. But they're still challenging the agency TPR proceeding, despite the fact the record doesn't contain any information about that beyond the final orders that arose from it. And the appellant reciting what happened prior to those proceedings, what happened in foster care, all of that recitation does not place into evidence those facts, but there is nothing in evidence about that.
But like, and this may be a better question for Ms. Hook, but you're here, so I'm going to ask.
I may defer to her.
A sign of error 4 is that the circuit court erred in finding on the day of the hearing in front of Judge Shaw
right.
That it could not examine or correct any errors in the termination of parental rights process, as that would be collaterally attacking a prior order. That issue has nothing to do with you and the adoption, other than it was a prerequisite for you being able to file for adoption. That is entirely an issue for the department.
That's exactly true, and the appeal periods had run on that. There was no challenge to that past the December final order for the father's TPR, which was the one under which these grandparents claim. There was no appeal on either the mother's voluntary or the father's circuit court. So that is over, and as far as I, as the adoption attorney, am concerned, I'm entitled to rely on that proceeding was conducted properly, which means that is not a flaw in the adoption. If they want to challenge the...
But there are circumstances where it could be, if it were procured by... If there was a sufficient showing of fraud, and we have, I believe, the one case where
but
I
that
consent
case,
to adoption...
That case was an adoption case. Unlike my case, in my case, these children were... Immediately prior to the adoption, they were parentless. Parental rights had been terminated. In the case you're referring to, grandparent was caring for the child. Grandparent defrauded or tricked the non-English-speaking father into consenting. That father's parental rights had never been terminated. The mother was deceased. The father was in full possession of parental rights. So the adoption had to deal with his parental rights. And in basically all of the cases that are citing dealing with parental rights and adoption, you have parents that have their parental rights.
Well, right, but I guess, although that was a consent case, I can conceive of a circumstance where somebody would be tricked into signing a document that would provide an
like
evidentiary bait. That is not a consent case, but then is you, the document itself is used to establish that terminating parental rights is appropriate. In that case, wouldn't the logic of FE versus GFM allow a court to look into the adoption? If the prerequisite was obtained by fraud.
I would say that probably yes, but you don't attack the adoption. You have to attack the case in which the fraud occurred. You have to go and attack the TPR proceeding, not the adoption proceeding. I have thought about that, but you know, the adoption is the only thing that has been challenged here. While the appellants want to discuss the TPR proceeding, they've never said they want to challenge that and set aside that. And actually, in their reply brief, they criticize us for talking about attacking the TPR. They say specifically the only thing under challenge is the adoption, although that's not where their focus is.
You've used more than half your time. I don't know what arrangement you have, but you can continue talk. However y'all want to divvy it up is fine.
Ms. Hook, yes.
Thank you. May it please the court again. I'm Carla Hook. I represent the local agency in this matter and did throughout the underlying termination of parental rights case as well. I first want to address Your Honor's issue that you raised earlier, since that seemed to be an issue before I begin with my remarks, and that is why I stand before you here today. If you look at the order that actually brought us here today, which was the December 20th, 2017 order of the Circuit Court, that order did two things. One, it denied appellants motion to rehear or retry the adoption case, and it, I guess, continued to vacate. It had already previously temporarily vacated its order allowing appellants access to the Circuit Court file, the Juvenile Court file, and the Department of Social Services file. And so that's how, quite frankly, how my client originally got into this, because there was an ex parte request to view our records, and we got notice that our Child Protective Services records had to be opened up, and so we immediately filed something to try to stop that, or to at least allow us to have a hearing on it to state why that was the case. And so even if, and I think Ms. Alexander, we noted this in our brief as well, the request to see our records, the Child Protective Services records, appears to have been abandoned at this point. However, there is still a request for the Circuit Court records and the Juvenile Court records. And if you're talking about the Juvenile Court records, my client is a party to that case. And so they are asking for a request to view a case for which we were a party. So I think that's how I've ended up here today in front of Your Honors. And my primary purpose in the few minutes I have left is to try to address this interplay between 16.1283 and adoption. And of course, as you're all well aware, 16.1283 is an entirely separate statutory process from the adoption proceeding. Indeed, it's a whole separate statutory scheme, not just dealing with termination of parental rights, but prior to termination of parental rights, you've got dispositional hearings, foster care review hearings, one or two, depending on the case, permanency planning hearings, and then leading up to the termination of parental rights. And I would say there's actually even more of a burden on my client than appellants would initially argue. It certainly, 16.1283 requires the court, whether it's a juvenile or circuit court, to consider placement with relatives in the course of that proceeding. But that obligation upon my client started way back at removal. Even prior to removal, both the court and my client are required to consider placement with relatives, and that's an ongoing requirement of my client through disposition, through foster care review, through permanency planning. So if you think about it in that sense, there are four or five final appealable orders before you get to termination of parental rights that could be appealed addressing the issue of relative placement. That can be addressed at dispositional hearing first, well before you even get to termination of parental rights, and then through foster care, through permanency planning, and then again at termination hearing. So there's actually multiple opportunities. At no time at any point in this foster care case were any of those appealed. Was there any intervention in those cases until the adoption became final? Again, as was previously noted.
Was the department aware at the time, and I know you weren't necessarily aware of everything the adoption attorney is doing, but I'm guessing there was at least some communication. Was the department aware of pending petitions for custody when the adoption was filed?
I can answer that question referring to a couple of things in the record. And then I can also answer it outside of the record if your honors want me to.
I'll take both.
Okay. The only thing that my client does for purposes of the adoption is the investigative report, and that's part of your record. If you look at the dates on that investigative report, they prepared it March the 20th. And the consent to adopt, I think it's the end of March. That was before the petitions for custody, which were April 3rd. So they had completed their work and provided it to Ms. Alexander before those petitions for custody were filed on April the 3rd. Now, moving to something that's outside of the record, the juvenile court processed those notices and those would not have come to Ms. Alexander or her clients because at that point my client was the custodian of the children. Those notices, and again, this is outside of the record, those notices were processed by the juvenile court on April the 25th. So that was after the adoption orders were already entered. So that's, again, I've checked my file just in case that question came up.
There's certainly nothing in the record to show that the department was aware of the petitions.
Correct. That's correct. I would like to note, I have 1 minute left, and I want to make sure I use my time. 16.1283 imposes an obligation during the termination proceeding to consider relatives. After rights are terminated, there's no ongoing obligation noted in the statute to continue to consider relatives, and that makes sense given the whole statutory scheme, because the whole statutory scheme is permanency. And once you've gotten all the way to termination and haven't been able to find safe placement with relatives, it makes sense that you don't have to keep continuing to consider relatives after that point. You can move quickly to consider adoption. See that my time is up. I have like 13 seconds left. We would ask the court to affirm that December 20th, 2017 order and deny the relief that's sought by the appellants. And thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just a couple of things. Last, to address what counsel said most recently, she said after the termination, there's no obligation for the department to continue looking at relatives. I disagree wholeheartedly with that. Virginia Code 16.1283 says any order terminating residual parent rights shall be accompanied by an order continuing or granting custody to the local department of social services. Reading farther on, however, in such cases, the court shall give a consideration to granting custody to relatives of the child, including grandparents. So grandparents are specifically to be considered and on that issue. To go back to your question, Your Honor, I would argue to the court that 16.1241 clearly articulates that grandparents are a party with legitimate interest. I just read from 16.1283 that the juvenile court shall give, both the department and the juvenile court shall give consideration of placing custody to the grandparents. I've articulated or noted in the brief the Social Security Act, Section 471, indicates that within 30 days of removal of a child, notice shall be given to all grandparents. The Department of Social Services manual, this is in our brief, 4.2.3.8.5, due diligence must be made to locate grandparents. So I understand your question, how do we rectify a grandparent and their interest? But I would ask the court, how would the grandparent, if the grandparents have a right and they have a right to be considered and the department is ordered and the lower courts are ordered to consider the grandparents, how would they ever exercise that right? How do we have a right if we have no recourse? They have to have some way to come before the court and say, hey, I wasn't considered. Hey, everybody, I wasn't considered. And for us to say, well, you have no way to be considered.
Why didn't they participate at his termination hearing? I mean, it seems to me, I mean, did they, They filed petitions right before the TPR against their son is initiated. They withdraw those petitions. Why didn't they go to the hearing? Why didn't they participate in the TPR hearing?
I do not know the answer to that, Your Honor, and I don't know that there is an answer in the record. I do know from practical experience, and I'm sure this court does, that a lot of times in those hearings in juvenile court, people are vying for custody and presenting themselves as an alternative and then removing themselves to try to get custody of the children or to have a favorable outcome. I noticed that my time is about to expire, but I would reiterate, if we're going to give the grandparents that much of a priority, and if we hold out that familial bond, is it really any right or a consideration if they have no way to act on it? And these parties did. They filed petitions for custody. After their petitions were filed in the circuit court right upstairs, and orders were entered 2 days later for the children, their grandchildren that had lived with them, for whom they were seeking custody, to be adopted by another family. We were asking this court to reverse the decision of the trial court to either order that a new trial on adoption be granted, or alternatively that a rehearing be held so that we can at least get the records, look at the records, and see whether there was fraud and how come the grandparents were not considered.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we'll come down and recounsel.